the three great riches of life. It is clear from the above quotations that there are three levels of Vedic knowledge. Repeatedly, in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, they are named Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana, by no less than Mahaprabhu himself. From what Vedic source does this threefold analysis of Shastra originate? The answer is Sri Krishna, who is himself the origin of the Vedas. This is confirmed by Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Lila 22.103 and the purports. The living entity who is subject to birth and death obtains immortality when he gives up all material activities and dedicates his life to the execution of my order and acts according to my directions. In this way, he becomes fit to enjoy the spiritual bliss derived from exchanging loving mellows with me. Purport. This is a quotation from Srimad Bhagavatam 11.29.34. Krishna was advising his most confidential servant, Uddhava, about Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana. These concern one's relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the activities that a relationship as well as the perfection of the life. The Lord also described the characteristics of confidential devotees. Right? So this is being quoted in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Right? So then, here we see Sambandha Abhideya Prayojana. Right? Subject attains immortality when he gives up all material activities, dedicates his life to execution of my order. Right? So that's dedication of life. That means your determination, your identity, how you situate yourself. So that's your Sambandha. So your Sambandha is that of servant of Krishna according to the directions of Krishna. Right? Acts according to my directions, so that's his Abhideya. And in this way becomes fit to enjoy the spiritual bliss derived from exchanging loving mellows with me, that's Prayojan. You catch that?
Yes.
Right? So this is how you are able to see this throughout, because sometimes it's mentioned, sometimes it's not. If it's always mentioned, right, constantly, over and over again, then one tends to not take it so seriously. Right? By saying it in different ways, it creates inspiration. It's different, so then you like to hear about it, right? The jiva needs variety, right? The feminine nature means they, without variety, they get bored very easily, right? So that would mean that in the presentation, then much of the time, Prabhupada may not use the technical terms. Sometimes he will, just so that you understand that's how it's functioning. Then, much of the time he won't, but that's poetics. You understand? We just take, oh, he's presenting it very simple. No, that's poetry. Poetry is very simple. Exact says what you want. Right? It's not that, oh, he's writing something simpler, and then his God brothers now, they're giving the higher purports and taking you to the higher realms. No, this is coming from the highest realm, that you can talk, Sambandha, but you can talk tattva coming out your ears. No, the problem. For Prabhupada. You want to see something technical? Read his stuff he was writing back in the 40s and 50s and see if you can even bend your head around it. But because he's dealing with an audience that can't handle all these things, he's writing simpler not because he can't write technical, but because we can't understand. Therefore, don't become bewildered by these unscrupulous statements of others that Prabhupada's giving just the basics. No, Prabhupada's giving the highest stuff. Also remember, where are basics coming from the transcendental realm? Is it an ascending process or descending process? So the basics are up. Technicalities are down. So when people saying they have more technical knowledge, then it can only be a furtherance if it's ascending knowledge, which we are not so interested in. If it's descending knowledge, then the technicalities aren't as important as the principles on which they're based. And if you can present those technicalities in a poetic way, that then one is able to understand these principles, how much better is that? That is called kavya. That is called, you know, very high writing skill. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Like that. So we always have to understand, Prabhupada said everything's in his books. he means it. Right? Because he uses these technical, sometimes devotee, he uses it so few, but he uses it. He quotes it here, right here, out of his mouth, Sambandha Abhideya Prayoja. There are devotees who will say Prabhupada doesn't talk about this. Right? The devotees say Nishkam Karma Yoga. They say, Prabhupada always talks about Nishkarmya. You know, if you're going to say Nishkar Karma Yoga, that's like saying a car and an automobile are two different things. That's, if you don't know the language, you might come up with that conclusion. Right? But he's saying that you should perform your service for Krishna without desire for results. What's that? What's the technical term for that? Naishkarmya or Nishkam Karma Yoga. Right? 11th Canto uses Nishkam Karma Yoga quite often. Right? Gita is using more the term Naishkarmya. Right? It's just there's a Sandhi there, that's all. Nishkam Karma or Naishkarmya. Right? That's all. So now, of that, Nishkam Karma, that's just giving it straight. Naishkarmya means you've gone to the trouble to use the Sandhi, which means it's more technically correct. So now, is this a higher term or a lower term?
Higher.
Then? So we understand. Remember before we were discussing about the Panchanga Nyaya. Prabhupada's talking about that, using the terms and even saying if it's not presented according to that, it's not considered Vedic. So all these different concepts are there. Where else are we getting them from, right? When you live in the sewer in one of the, you know, cities of the world, you know, like that, what do we know about this stuff? Right? And then the devotees come and pick us up out of these sewers and bring us in contact with Krishna consciousness. Then we learn about this stuff. Does that make sense? Then having learned about it, now we're bigger pundits than Prabhupada. It doesn't work. Right? Bengali saying, we've said it before, that you sharpen the knife on the tree and then use the tree to test the knife if it's sharp. Right? So by Prabhupada's association, we become expert at the philosophy, and then having learned it, now we use the philosophy against Prabhupada. Not very cultured, not very, how you say, developed here. Like that. They maybe use, you know, the First Amendment, freedom of speech, or these kind of things, but that's America. Like that. You know, we're talking Vedic here. We're talking universal. We're talking about God's culture. Freedom of speech, yeah, you can say whatever you want, but know that your freedoms also take you to various regions. You speak the wrong thing, you go to hell. So you are free to speak whatever you want, but the consequences are yours. You can't say, you know, I'm going to jump off this building, and because, you know, I'm a liberal, and I believe in freedom of speech, therefore, when I hit the ground, nothing's going to happen. Does that make sense? So it's a matter of using your intelligence when you speak, not just letting it babble. Otherwise, kids babble. So why not, you know, take them to the conference room when the CEO and the board of directors are there? They should all bring their kids, you know, then they can have the meeting. They'll consider it a waste of time. Why? Because they're getting something done. So for those who are trying to go back to Godhead, it's a waste of time to hear the babblings of people who don't support what Prabhupada's saying in his books. It's an absolute waste of time. Like that. So we have to be very, very careful here. So the idea is to become situated, that we understand this technical, traditional angle of the philosophy, but through how Prabhupada gives it. We don't have to go to somewhere else to get it. Right? Does that make sense? We don't have to go to somewhere else to get it. Prabhupada gives it. Or if he wants to... that you should get more technical, then he'll tell you where to go. So then those books are used. Right? Prabhupada said, everything that Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote is contained in two books. Right? The Chaitanya Shikshamrita and the Jiva Dharma. So that's we don't need to study the other books. Right? You mentioned a Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's book. Read Brahma Samhita, not the other books. Right? Everything's there. So then you do that. Then you're following properly. Does this make sense? So it's there. It's nothing. Continuing. Some 4,500 years later at Varanasi, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu instructed Sanatana Goswami, after the latter's successful escape from his enforced service to Nawab Hussain Shah in Bengal. In the following memorable verse, Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lita 20.143, the Lord stated plainly that Sri Krishna hinted to Uddhava in the enigmatic language of confidentiality. Veda Shastra kahe sambandha abhideya prayojana. Krishna Krishna bhakti prelatin mahadhana. Right? Great gifts, great riches, okay, here. In Vedic literature, Krishna is the central point of attraction, sambandha, and his service is our activity, abhideya. To attain the platform of love of Krishna is life's ultimate goal, prayojana. Therefore, Krishna, Krishna's service, and love of Krishna are the three greatest riches of life. Right? So this is then what we preach. When we give somebody the philosophy, we give them these three. Right? Krishna, Krishna's service, and love of Krishna. So Krishna means Krishna, and who he is, who we are, what's our relationship. So he's the central point of attraction. Means whatever we're attracted to, Krishna's the central point. Right? Now it's just a matter of you being aware of that or not. Right? You have in a society, even a karmic society, you always have your intellectuals, you always have your administrators, you always have those dealing with economics, you always have those who assist the others. Every society is like that. Right? Now, by being aware of it, then you can more scientifically deal with it, because you understand who you're dealing with it. By not being aware of it doesn't mean that it's still not organized in this fashion. Does that make sense? You don't know what a dog is, it doesn't mean because you don't know, you don't get bit. Right? It's the people who know that don't get bit. Therefore, if you've dealt with Vedic culture and you found it didn't do you good, it was bad for you, then what does that mean? By this, following this logic.
We don't know
Vedic culture. Otherwise, it wouldn't bite. Does that make sense? You don't know how to deal, it bites. You know how to deal, it doesn't bite. So therefore, we can't say, we've tried this, been there, done that. You know? This is something that's always been there, always will be. So you can't say been there, done that. It doesn't apply. It may be good for your ego, you may feel good, you're 50 years old, 60 years old, may work nice for you, but in reality, who cares? God's a little bit older than 60 years old. Just a touch. He doesn't look it though, that's the one thing he's got on you. He's a lot older than you and he still looks 16. Aren't you envious? Yeah. At the Bhakti Shastri level, okay, then moving on. At the Bhakti Shastri level is renunciation through wisdom. Too challenging a guide to Gita philosophy. Oh, okay, here. At Bhakti Shastri level is the book Renunciation Through Wisdom too challenging a guide to Gita philosophy? Right? In other words, is it too high level? Like that. If one persuades oneself that the comprehension of Vedic knowledge in terms of sambandha, abhideya, and prayojana, as presented by Srila Prabhupada in Renunciation Through Wisdom, properly belongs to a highly rarefied sphere of Shastric education, to wit, quote, more advanced than the Bhakti Shastri level, unquote. One must face the fact on the evidence presented in this introduction that one is deluding oneself. The quotations cited above from His Divine Grace were written by Srila Prabhupada for general readers, albeit in the Bengali language. It is indeed arguable that an average Bengali, during the late 1940s through the 50s, when the series of essays making up the book were originally published, would have had a greater degree of homegrown familiarity with the person of Sri Chaitanya and his Sankirtan movement than the average New Yorker or Londoner. But it is just as arguable that his homegrown familiarity would be robbed of its vitality by the weeds of deeply rooted prejudice ingrown misconceptions and the blasé presumption of knowing already all these things. It is obvious to anyone with eyes in their heads that this unfortunate state of affairs motivated Srila Prabhupada to focus and focus again on the basic themes of Gita philosophy. In Renunciation Through Wisdom, His Divine Grace most certainly did not indulge in the sort of, quote, exercise in logic and sophistry, unquote, that he specifically condemns in paragraph 3, cited above. A glance at the book's contents page and a leaf through the pages of the main text speak loudly for this conclusion. Srila Prabhupada taught his readership that the material nature is full of miseries. He urged them to learn about the formula for peace. He desired they accept that Lord Krishna alone is the supreme Godhead. As far as the technicalities of Bhagavad philosophy go, Renunciation Through Wisdom demands no more of the reader than the soft-bound books of Prabhupada's English language essays on Bhagavad Gita did, that the BBT released years later. For example, the topmost yoga system, Beyond Birth and Death, and On the Way to Krishna. On page 9 of his introduction, His Holiness Bhakti Churu Swami asserts with no reservations. In Renunciation Through Wisdom, Srila Prabhupada has simplified the teachings of the Bhagavad Gita for our understanding. So that's just in case, because technical words are used, someone may say, oh, this is too technical. Right? But that's not the point. He simplified this so that we can understand. You might as well get technical at some point, right? You want to look at, you use a computer, you got to get technical. So you might as well get technical in the philosophy. Okay, next section. Any questions? Everybody's okay with all this? The babblings of two madmen here. So. Okay. From Maya Chaitanya Yogena Bhaktir Abhyacharini, the three great riches are to be mined. In ISKCON, Bhagavad Gita as it is the principal scripture studied at the Bhakti Shastri level. Following the lead of Bhakti Charu Maharaj, we believe that Renunciation Through Wisdom embarks upon a number of daring, though perfectly authorized, and wholly consistent leaps across the structural logic of Sri Krishna's original text. The connections brought to light reveal the three great riches of Shastra, most valued by Lord Chaitanya. Furthermore, they are confirmed by Srila Prabhupada himself. Right? Remember, Lord Chaitanya says these are the great riches, right? Therefore, Krishna, Krishna's service, and love of Krishna are the three great riches of life. So if you understand the Sambandha Abhideya Prayojana in connection with Krishna, right? We're not worried about Sambandha Abhideya Prayojana, not in connection with Krishna. So that means then, when we're applying it, it's not just applied in the philosophy, but in our life, because our life is supposed to be connected to Krishna, being done for Krishna's pleasure. So that means every aspect of our life is applied in this way. That means Sambandha Abhideya Prayojana apply in that. So it may be used in the mundane sense, but it's for Krishna's pleasure. So therefore it becomes spiritualized. So whether using direct devotional service, direct philosophy and then that's obvious. Or the indirect, you're just day-to-day life, you're still using these same principles. What are you attracted to in your daily life? It's actually Krishna. You think it's something else. Right? You're acting for Krishna. That means that thing that you think is something else other than Krishna, you're using in Krishna's service. And the reason that you're using that thing that you're attracted to that you think is not Krishna, though it actually is, that you're using in Krishna's service, you're doing it for His satisfaction, not your own. So did we leave out anything in your life? If we're claiming to be Krishna conscious and 24/7 and all that. Does that make sense? So that means it has to be applicable everywhere. So these three great riches means that in everything in your life, no matter what it is, where it is, what situation, they can be applied. And that's the beauty of it. There's no situation in life that these don't apply to. There's no interaction. There's no identity. There's no result that they don't apply to. Right? In the world, there's unlimited things to be attracted to or to identify with. But all of them are seen in connection with Krishna through this process. Right? There's unlimited activities, but they're all connected to Krishna through this process. And these activities, based on those identities, give unlimited results. Those are all for Krishna's pleasure. So there's nothing left out. Remember, Krishna is the universal form. So all the hands and legs and arms and mouths and senses of the universe are all contained in the universal form. So that means nothing's not connected to Krishna. Everything's connected to Krishna. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yes.
It means that we just have to be aware of it, right?
We just have to be aware of it. That's all. Right? And so the philosophy gives that awareness. That's why we study Shankhya. That's why we study the breakdown of the universe and what the interactions of the universe, relationships between certain qualities and actions and their results. What qualities then generate other qualities? What are the root qualities? What are the secondary qualities? All these things that we consider technical, not so important. These are all the technical things that engage all the technical things in your life. The funniest part is someone who deals with less of the material energy is willing to study the technical. Those who deal with more are not willing. But the ones who actually need it are the ones that are more engaged. Right? Does that make sense? Who needs to know more about electronics? Somebody who just has a mobile phone, or someone who has a few mobile phones and, you know, a computer and so many other gizmos and gadgets. Who needs to know more? Right? But they're the ones that say, no, I just need to know less. Oh, I just chant Hare Krishna. We don't worry about the rules. How does he use his stuff? You know what I'm saying? So if we're going to worry about other rules, man-made rules, why wouldn't we worry about God's rules? You're worrying about rules anyway. So then why not connect those rules to God, since ultimately every rule you can follow back at some point to God? So why not, because we're devotees, take that little step? I don't think God would be displeased. Right? I don't think it would be a devotional fault if you connected everything back to Krishna. I don't think he would think that this is fanatic. Right? Does that make sense? The householder connects everything he does back to his family. And it's a broad range of activities he does. Right? He's stepping off the bus and not stepping in the dog stool. Okay, so, you know, so, but all that is there because if he goes home with that, then there's trouble. You know what I'm saying? Because last time he wasn't careful, and when he came home, then someone in the house happened to notice and complain. Right? First of all, the daughter said it stink. You know, and then after that, then the mom came and checked it out. And then after that, then his peaceful life on the couch reading his newspaper was disrupted. Does that make sense? So therefore, now he's very careful. Right? You know, he doesn't allow, when he's eating his sandwich, you know, the mustard to fall out and, you know, onto his suit. Because last time that happened, it also didn't go very well for him, right? Right? Unless he knew it was a hitch. But then, other than that, it just didn't go nicely for him. Right? Does that make sense? So, but we also have to remember that was before they were married. After they were married, no mustard on the suit. Right? Yes.
You mentioned that what can be attracted to? Sandra is really attracted to because she's attractive.
Yes.
What about things which are not attractive?
What are things about are not attractive? It's the reverse. Otherwise, where does it get its potency? Because the things you're not attracted to, someone else is.
But there are some things which are generally unattractive.
Okay, let's take, you know, just something that will, generally I would expect, at least everyone sitting in this room would agree with. Okay, let's take some garbage, okay? Old stinky cabbage leaves or something, okay? So we may not be attracted to it, but there are living entities who it's very nice, you know. The rats like it, huh?
More than us.
Yeah, more than us, right? You know.
Rats.
Yeah, so they're more attracted to it than we're repulsed by it. Does that make sense? So that same potency is there. just it's in as positive or negative. Right? You like somebody very much, and then they do something that upsets you, and then you, to the same degree, don't like them. So where did it come from? Right? Because if you're not attracted by something, you couldn't care less if it's there or not. Only that which you're attracted to are you upset by. We're only attracted to some certain features because that's our nature, so that's all we notice. Eyes, are they attracted to smell? Are your eyes attracted to good smell? No, because they have a nature. Right? So therefore, someone in a particular rasa is attracted to particular features of Krishna by nature. Mother Jashoda is looking at his cuteness. He's 16 years old. To her, he's cute. But is he cute to the gopis? No, he's handsome to the gopis. Right? Now and again, the mom may say, he's handsome. Oh, that's my son. He's so handsome. He's so, you know what I'm saying? So she's going to see it through that light because of the rasa. Just like we'll move through the field here and only notice certain things. You'll walk out of here, you might notice the house there, you might notice the bikes, or the cycles there. You know, you might notice a brick that you don't stub your toes because you value your toes. But did you notice the nice, you know, grass sitting on the side? But when the cow walks in, it walks right past everything else, couldn't care less about the bicycles, and goes straight to the grass. So in other words, what is important to you is what you notice. So what you notice, that you have to see in connection to Krishna. Right? You don't have to see things you don't see. Like when you walk out of here, you don't have to connect and engage the barbed wire fence that is over there in Krishna's service. Because you don't notice it, it means nothing to you. It's not in your field of activities, so you're not obliged to engage it. You know what I'm saying? But the person who deals with the grounds here, they have to know about it and have to. They have to see it's properly maintained and everything. So they have to be aware of it. Does that make sense? So that's the idea. Yes?
You also gave an example of for a family man. He centers everything around his family, and then he gave a few examples.
Yeah.
So he's taken that this example, you know, this relationship is based on fear.
Relationship's based on fear.
So how can we convert this relationship to Krishna on the basis of attraction, attachment?
Okay. Interesting. Yeah. This is the advantage of the, how do you say? Someone in this situation, they wouldn't even think beyond what was said. You know what I'm saying? So someone not in the situation, you know, can see the forest. But the other one can't see the forest. So that's why then there's this element of, you know, how you say, the sadhu sangha. Then you see from different perspectives. Means that's based on fear, but that fear ultimately is based on what? Why would he be fearful?
Attachment.
Attachment, but that attachment is a symptom of what?
Attraction.
Yeah, attraction. So there's some attraction, there's some affection is there. So therefore he doesn't want to displease them. Right? That would be the higher. The lower is there's attraction, so he just wants nice interaction with them, so he becomes afraid of bad interaction. So then he'll tend to do nice. But it's more mechanical. You know, it's being done, it's more for his own self, that if I behave nicely, I'm dealt with nicely. Right? But if one matures in that, then one deals nicely because this is what one is supposed to do. So he wants to see the others pleased. Rather than when they're pleased, he's worked it out. When they're happy, I'm happy. So I want to be happy, so the more I make them happy, the more I'm happy. But rather is that my duty, I make them happy. I don't worry about my happiness. That comes anyway. Okay? So now the whole point is if this is attractive and all that, and we know by what we've discussed a little bit earlier, is that it's that all that kshetra, that's the field of activities. There may be living entities in that field, but the point is it's still field to us. Right? So then, if that eyesight, that field is there, why we're attracted to it or repulsed, that's all Krishna. So then, those elements of attraction, then we have to start seeing a connection with Krishna. And then if it's Krishna's potency we're dealing with, how would you, like you want to work with the deity, how do you deal with the deity? However you like? No. According to what?
Rules of Krishna.
Yeah, rules of Pancharatra. Who gave those rules of Pancharatra?
Krishna.
Okay. So now, where are the social rules defined? In the Pancharatra? Which Shastra?
Dharma Shastra.
Dharma Shastra. That defines relationships and the rules of relationships. Right? Who gave that knowledge?
Krishna.
Krishna. To? Well, but before that, where did Bhrigu get it?
Brahma.
So Krishna gave to Brahma, who then instructed his sons, right? So Bhrigu's one of the sons, Manu's one of the sons, right? Narad Muni's one of the sons. So we hear the same knowledge in various places, right? Because it's come from the same source. So then, like seventh canto, then it's Narad Muni on Dharma Shastra to Yudhishthira, right? And then in the Manusamhita, then it's Bhrigu Muni to the sages, right? But it's already been introduced by Brahma and saying, I've given this to my sons, now my son will instruct you. Right? So then that means if I'm dealing with Krishna, then I should be dealing with Krishna how Krishna wants to be dealt with. So if he's in the deity form, I follow Pancharatra. But if he's in a social form, then I would follow Manu, right? Now let's say I'm attracted by money, he's in an economic form, then what Shastra do I follow?
Arthashastra.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
So that's the whole point, is that Krishna has come in these forms. Therefore, you have to deal with him according to the Shastra, according to his form. Otherwise, how do you know? Mother Yashoda spontaneously deals that way. But in this world, the conditional state is not known for its spiritual spontaneity. Material, maybe, but not spiritual. Therefore, the spiritual is based on rules. So that means the Artha Shastra, in other words, the Dharma, Artha, Kama, and Moksha Shastras are meant for what? They're meant for, yes, for upliftment. They're meant to show you how, in your life, these four aspects that are important to your conditioned nature, that you consider your field of activities, but you understand how that field is Krishna, how to engage that field that's Krishna in Krishna's service according to Krishna's direction. Does that make sense? Yes.
They said also that's why the sambandha is important.
Yes.
The man who avoids the dog store is doing it for his, and on the fear level is doing it, to avoid trouble.
Mm-hmm.
But the same activity is done by a man who's doing it to keep, people happy.
Yes.
The relationship.
Yes. 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 Right. So, in other words, there's these two stages. Two we're discussing here that are useful. Is that you've understood this. And so in the beginning it's more understanding and we have our own conditioning, so we're doing it more out of, fear of the reactions or desire for good reactions. But as we mature in that, by practicing in that way with this knowledge, it will mature into following it because you're comfortable with that. That's what should be done. You're happy to do these things. To please others, to work for others, perform your duties, right? And then the reciprocation is actually even greater then. Because if you're not looking for something, you're just sitting there and minding your own business, and somebody comes along, and brings you some mahaprasad, then that's very nice, isn't it? You're already happy and satisfied, and then this mahaprasad comes along, it's more. But now if you're sitting around just waiting for mahaprasad, how often does it come? So that means how much of the time you're going to be disappointed. Right? So if you're looking for nothing, then when something good comes, you're already happy, you're already satisfied, then you're putting happiness on top of happiness. Right? So then that's nice. Right? But if you're always looking for your own benefit and performing your duties, even though they're the right duties, it's proper, it's considered good, but for your own purposes, how much of the time you're going to be disappointed? Most of the time, because who is the control of the material energy? You. Okay. All right. But always wanting to know who it was. I got a few things I want to work out. I don't like the way certain things are going. So maybe if you could address them. Krishna. Oh, okay. You're okay. You were raising your hand that you wanted to make a statement, not that you were responding to the direct. Okay. Sorry, my mistake. Okay. So Krishna, he's the Lord of the material energy, right? We're not. We're always the servant of energy, right? Bhaktivinoda Thakur. That's how you define a jiva. He's always servant of energy, never master of it. And Krishna is always master of energy, like that. Does that make sense? Doesn't make sense. Yeah. No, it makes sense. No, it makes sense. No, it makes sense. English is a very unique medium of communication. So do you like that? No, yes. Okay, so does that make sense? So then Krishna being the center of all this, then we're trying to serve him. So we do that through what method? The method given to us by the acharyas, right? So then Sanatana Goswami, he gives the, what do you call it? Hari Bhakti Vilas, so that you know that all the particular rituals of the Pancharatrik are being done properly. Rupa Goswami tells us how the devotional process works, the attitude of it, right? They all talk about the goal, you know, of pleasing Krishna, love of God, right? Then for technical things outside the Bhagavat or the Pancharatrik, then the Vedic literatures are there to do the exact same thing. Unscrupulous people use them badly, just like unscrupulous people use the Goswami's works for their own mundane purposes, right? They're called Sahajiyas, right? Apasampradayas, right? We'll study them later, like that in the afternoon class. But they are taking the same thing and using it wrong, right? Like that, they're misapplying it. So that doesn't mean that it's bad. The misapplication we avoid, right? Those who do that and that kind of interpretation. But the Vedic literatures, they have the same purpose as the transcendental literatures, right? Just that they can be used, you know, improperly, that's all. But that's not their fault, right? They're there for Krishna conscious culture. If people want to be not Krishna conscious and apply them, that's not our fault, right? But being Krishna conscious and applying them, that's what they're there for. So then we have a whole different perspective on the Vedic literature. So for us, there's not a problem in the various Vedic literatures, the different discussions, the different perspectives, the different uses. Because for us, it's all part of the same process of engaging yourself, you know, in identity and attraction, in action and in results in Krishna's service. Right? So therefore, all these literatures also work according to Sambandha Abhideya and Prayojana. Right? That was back in the, how do you say, ancient times, that's where this discussion started, right? Is that it started as that you're going to connect Sambandha Abhideya Prayojana on the Bhagavat level, on the Pancharatrik level, and on the Vedic level. Right? And the Vedic includes everything mundane you'd ever have to deal with. Right? Does that make sense? Like that. Okay. As we have seen above, out of the often quoted 20 items of knowledge listed by Srila Prabhupada, From Bhagavad Gita 13.8.12, one is identified as directly, mukhya. Oh, one is identified as direct, mukhya, and 19 as indirect, gona. Right? We discussed this mukhya and gona. Mukhya means is the direct or the root or the principle. Gona then is the secondary. It's not the primary. No, the primary and secondary. So the mukhya is always important. The gona then, as applicable, they're important. Right? So they're important, but it may be sometimes they're used, sometimes not, sometimes seen, sometimes not, sometimes appreciated, sometimes not. But the mukhya has to always be appreciated. You miss the mukhya, you've missed the whole point. There's no use to the discussion. So if we're discussing about, you know, devotees' rights or this or that, if you've missed the point as servant of Krishna, and according to Krishna's service, that this concept of rights is to be engaged in Krishna's service, there's absolutely no use to that discussion. It will be a mundane political discussion. It won't be spiritual. Does that make sense? So the idea is that you have to keep the mukhya in mind. Otherwise, even dealing with the gona, you're dealing with humility. Oh, you have to be humble, Prabhu. So what does humble mean? Everybody has their idea what humble means. But humble is based on the primary quality of engaged in the Lord's service. So if that humility doesn't result in service to the Lord, it's not actual humility. Right? Like that devotee saying, oh Prabhupada, I'm so fallen, I'm so useless, I'm so this, I'm so that. Prabhupada said, you're not so anything. You know. Or most, yeah, you say, I'm the most fallen, I'm the most this. You said you're not the most anything. So that means his being the most fallen was not humility. Right? Others are fallen, I'm the most fallen, so I'm more fallen than them. I'm better than them. Does that make sense? So that's the whole aspect. If it's not connected through the mukhya, through the root, then it's not connected. It's that simple, right? It's not plugged in, it's not plugged in. No, but why you're discriminating, it's not plugged in, you know, why do you make a distinction just because it's not plugged in? Why do you have to, you know, put it in its own category? What is it? This is a discussion of idiots. It sounds nice. It's very sweet. It sounds very personal and very considerate, but it's absolutely unusable. It has never been able to be used and applied in anyone's life anywhere in history. It sounds good. So emotionally it may be useful, but as far as practically getting anything done, it's never gotten anything done. Right? The proper application of the rules, you know, with the proper attitude, that's the only way things have actually ever gotten done. You apply the rules without the attitude, they still don't work very well. You get more out of, you know, having just, you know, being trying to be pleasant and nice and not having any idea about the field and how it works and getting something done. You know, the sentiment drives you on. Why? Because the attitude, there's some element of the attitude that's right. That's what's making it work, not the method. You understand? So the Vedic is have the right attitude and have the right method. Right? Then it works very well. Now in his translation of Bhagavad Gita as it is, 13.8.12. His divine grace links a gona item with the mukhya one. Nityam cha sama chitta pham ishtan ishto papatishu mai chanya yogena bhaktir avyabhi varini. To form an English phrase, even mindedness amid pleasant and unpleasant events and unalloyed devotion to me. Why did he do this? And why did he not simply concentrate on the single item of unalloyed devotion to Krishna and cut down the rest of the rather long purport on the 19 supportive items? But this is an important principle, is that he's putting them together because this is what makes it work. The gona is important. You know, that's the other problem, is then, okay, so this is important, that means everything else is not. But that's not the method. No, this is the most important. All these are important, but of these, this is more important. Right? In other words, Varnashram, everyone is human, but of humans, then there's a hierarchy, how to make the human system work. Right. Does that make sense? Rather than, okay, the Brahmins are the top and everybody else is scum. No, they're all humans, right? Understand, human is beyond, you know, the tribals of, you know, that he mentioned before, the New Yorkers and Londoners. Those are just various, you know, world tribes living in various, you know, how you say, cement jungles. Does that make sense? So this is very important. I was going to show how this is working, this principle of you have the main, but how it connects to these others and how you pull them together, because that brings out the proper attitudes, the proper situations, everything in which then this devotion can be done. Because otherwise, if we strip the others away, you have that devotion, how do you express it? Right? The devotion is expressed through Dainya Bodhika, through humility, right? Or other qualities. Yeah? That makes sense. Okay, so we'll continue with that on Thursday.
Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Śrīla Prabhupāda ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandini.